Welcome to the Thomistic Institute podcast. Our mission is to promote the Catholic intellectual tradition in the university, the church, and the wider public square. The lectures on this podcast are organized by university students at Thomistic Institute chapters around the world. To learn more and to attend these events, visit us at ThomisticInstitute.org.
Calling all university students, immerse yourself in the ancient and medieval Roman intellectual tradition while living in the Eternal City. Apply now for our Spring 2025 Study Abroad program. The deadline is August 15th and space is limited. Don't miss out. Apply today at ThomisticInstitute.org/Rome.
Speaking of Father Irenaeus, do you all know the jaw-droppingly good quotation from St. Irenaeus? Father probably knows many, but you must know the one to which I'm referring. Father will correct me when I get it not quite right. Which does it begin by saying, the glory of God is, or does it begin with, man alive? Which way? Man alive.
The glory of God.
The glory of God is man fully alive.
The Latin, yeah. Man living.
Vivens. Isn't that astounding? It so fits with our theme. The glory of God is man living. May I suggest, it's a very Aristotelian point to simply see being virtuous is really living. You know, there's human life, and then there's human life. And to see the difference makes all the difference. Everybody's alive in some sense, but what does it really mean to be alive? Well, that's what all this is about. And then going back to kind of our theme and opening of yesterday, and of course, to be alive is to be alive together. Because are you really alive if you're not alive together? In those various ways of being together that God calls us, our very intimate friends, our spouse, that family community, that religious community, that political community, all these are ways of man being alive. I'm so excited. This seems to happen all the time. So we had Ezekiel, by the way, again this morning. I resisted looking over at Father. Again, I will put my spirit in you. You know, it was in our liturgy reading this morning. We'll get a load of this. Looked ahead to today's readings for Sunday. So the second reading is from the Epistle of St. Paul to the Romans. I just got to tell you now, and we'll come back to it shortly in context. St. Paul says, and this is going to be the opening of the reading today, owe no one anything except to love each other. Well, we're about to talk about justice, and justice is all about owing. So St. Paul opens by saying, owe no one anything. So I broke into the library downstairs to get, just kidding, one of the brothers let me in, just make it a little more dramatic. I was wandering around looking, I forgot to ask, how am I going to get in here? And then a white-robed man appeared. Where do they come from? And I ran downstairs and got St. Thomas's commentary on this section, and it's jaw-dropping. So we'll come back to that in a little bit. All right. So anyway, here we go. Just a quick reminder of yesterday. When everything is in its place, everything can be most itself. When everything is in its place, everything can be most itself. So St. Thomas loves to quote Aristotle, sapientis est ordinare, which we translate as, it's the business, it belongs to, it pertains to the wise man to order, to see order, to give order. It's always about order. The sense in God and everything of God, there's always perfect order. And order is so rich. It's so much richer than we realize. When everything is in its place, everything can be most fully itself. I invite you to keep that in mind as we just go back to remind you of, we ask, why are we rational at all? We distinguish between two ways of using reason. There's a speculative, just seeking knowledge for the sake of seeing the truth, and there's practical reasoning. We're taking knowledge and we're doing something with it. It's always kind of a how-to. Well, you know, there's an order between these two. If you get that order wrong, you basically ruin both of them. But if you get the order right, then you get both of them in their full form. When everything's in its place, especially in kind of a teleological ordering or hierarchy, realizing what's for the sake of what. So I pointed out in that context, those who, when they think of the how-to use of reasoning, the practical use of reasoning, those that are kind of in the practical wisdom, the prudence tradition, the likes of Socrates, hey, it's all about discovering the true human good. And then in all of your free actions, trying to bring that about. Well, interestingly, those that see that about practical reasoning, they're the ones who realize that practical reasoning itself is ultimately subordinate to speculative reasoning and serves it. So even prior to Aristotle, who is the great master of expounding this, you already have this in Socrates and Plato, where for Plato, when it comes down to it, it's all about seeing the highest things. What more is there that man can do? And again, this goes back to St. Irenaeus's great line, man fully alive is man seeing. It's man seeing the highest things. But that, when you see the primacy of the speculative, again, if I may just make this point, when everything in its place, everything can flourish. You see it in its fullness. When practical reasoning is in its place, serving the higher, then it itself thrives. Human life, the best of civilization, when everything practical was not ultimately its own ends, but served the higher life, then the whole practical realm, may I say, worked much better. Human life was much more fulfilling and well-ordered. So I just wanted to begin with this kind of, you know, principle at 30,000 feet. This is one of the beautiful things about good philosophy and theology. The more you see the order of things, the more that we're able to put everything in its place and experience it all for it's supposed to be. So justice. I'm going to give you a few quotations, and we're going to begin by kind of seeing how St. Thomas relates prudence and justice in laying out the four cardinal virtues. A great way of just getting a sense of how justice fits in, and his sister kind of already set this up for us, is a couple of these quotations. So I'm going to look at number 11 quotation. Prudence has the good essentially. Justice effects this good. Remember, the word effects in English means brings about. Affect just means to have some influence on. Effect means to bring it about, as it's basically its efficient cause. Prudence has the good essentially. Justice effects this good, whereas the other virtues safeguard this good insofar as they moderate the passions, lest they do lead man away from reason's good. So right there is a great line that kind of brings together our theme for our time together of the four cardinal virtues. The good of man, the human good, is a good of reason. It's a good that reason must discover and understand. Remember, we talk about how prudence has to understand the principles of the good life, which again could be cast in terms of order. What order do you put in your life. Eventually, I know we're going, you all going to bring us back to Sunday, and I'm so glad that Sister made that a theme, because in a sense, to understand Sunday, the Lord's Day, is to understand order. To get the Lord's Day right, you have to know the hierarchy of goods. In a sense, the command as regards Sunday is a command to very concretely, physically, puts the order of the hierarchy of things into our day. So we'll circle back to that, but I think that's a very powerful angle from which to see it. If you know you're not even supposed to pick something up right now and move it, you know, is this scrupulosity, or is this a physical way of enacting the hierarchy of goods? No, we're about doing higher things right now, knowing the human good is a rational good. Reason has to understand that order, in order that ultimately is reflective of the nature of God, that He has created us in the image of. So our flourishing, this is the glory of God, us fully alive according to this beautiful, so rich, so full order. So that good exists in prudence, essentially. But then justice affects this good. So just think of it, effects it. Think of it this way. I mean, when you look at the four cardinal virtues, again, prudence is in reason, practical reason. Fortitude and temperance are in the two aspects of that sense appetite. Justice is the rectification of your will. It's that fundamental perfection of your will so that it, as it were, is always willing good rightly. This is huge and broad. Justice is much more rich and broad than we would have thought. And so here, if I have the habit, remember, habit is a firm disposition to act in a certain way. So to just paint the picture for you, remember, and this is so wonderfully Thomistic Aristotelian. These habits are a way of actualizing or fulfilling what the power was made to do. So that gives you, it's so organic. It's so like when you think about, you know, trees become most themselves when they grow in a particular way. Well, as Sister pointed out, your power, the powers of soul that can have these virtues, she said they have to be open to some determination. They could go one way or the other. Our will, despite its natural ordination to will lots of good stuff, that's what it's naturally designed to do. But at the same time, it doesn't have to do that. Your will can go towards bad things. We can form bad habits of willing. Habits that actually are contrary to the natural ordination of the power. And so, boom, right there you have this great insight into unhappiness. We're unhappy when we have habits in these powers that are contrary to the natural ordination of the power. Your will is designed to move towards really, really, really good things. And so the way that our will becomes fulfilled is when, through repeated good actions, good choices, the will starts to have this firm disposition. It takes on this beautiful character. Now, being, as it were, this is so Aristotelian, it's so powerful to say this, more fully itself. It's more fully itself. We always see this in nature, and it's so much the case in human nature. When we have any of these virtues, those powers of your soul, your reason, which is designed to see the truth and then understand the order so that you can put things in their place. This is what Socrates was saying, as in a sense, what else is there than to be able to use my reason to discern the order of things and then bring that about in my life? Well, again, the will is the commanding power, or it's that which executes what your technically command is both intellect and will, but it's the execution of what you understand. So our justice is this habit in the will of always enacting in the various ways of life the order that prudence understands. Again, prudence has the good essentially, justice effects it. And then there's this, and again, because order, when you put everything in its place, everything can be most itself. Hierarchy is always good. So justice, pardon me, fortitude or courage and temperance, oh, they're lower than justice. Is this denigrating them? No. It gives them, as is always the case with right order, it gives them their true dignity. Courage is so critically important because the courageous man will always render what's due, no matter what. This is the glory of courage. So in a sense, having right fear is not ultimately simply for its own sake. The main reason you see the true value and goodness of being courageous when you realize that being courageous is what empowers that man standing in battle, who, by the way, has fear. I'm out in the country. That I love rednecks. I move among them. I call myself one of them. I'm all about it. But you know, but the redneck bumper sticker that they put on the truck that says "No Fear," hey, guys. I know what you meant. I know what you're going after. But we need to talk a little bit of Aristotle here, because honestly, if you have no fear, then you're inhuman. There's something horribly wrong with you if you have no fear. And indeed, actually, this is very important for things military. Sometimes young men seem to think that the goal is to have no fear so that they could go into battle and somehow like not care about anything, versus the man who has things in the right order. When he goes into battle, of course he fears death. If he dies, he doesn't go home to his wife and children, for mercy's sake. Of course he fears death, but he fears something more. If they get past me, there's my family back there. Now that is not going to happen. Someone who has his passions in order, his passions actually serve his being just. He has appropriate fear. So not only do the passions not get in the way of doing the just thing, they actually help serve you doing the just thing. A quick sidebar. Same thing can be said in the realm of temperance. And this seems like a category buster. But remember, chastity is having the order of reason that prudence understands. And that's why at some point that we study this, that we understand what chastity really means. Having the order of reason, as Pieper says, in our sexual desires. When the order, that's just such a, it's so, can sound so very far away. But it's important to begin by understanding it, even if it's not something we ever fully achieve in this life, to understand that chastity, one of the subparts of temperance, means you have the order of reason literally in your sexual desires. So just as I said of the courageous man, not only are his sexual desires tending not to get in the way of things, but they actually serve whatever his state in life is. The most obvious of that we're not even go to the beauty of how even in the religious state, having the order of reason in your sexual desires can serve the religious state. It's very clear how having the order of reason in your sexual desires is an astoundingly beautiful part of marriage. And we hardly ever hear about this. We hardly ever talk about this. These desires that so easily go out of bounds and cause us to do bad things, when imbued with reason, and thus many have very little experience to even have any sense of what that would look or feel like, is a beautiful part of marriage. And it's just part of this whole thing of when there's the order of reason there, everything is in its place. Everything can be fully itself. The other quotation here to give us a sense of what justice is. Just look at number 8 there, just right above that. Justice, this is St. Thomas, a certain rectitude of the mind. And he's using mind in a broad sense there. Mens in Latin, it clearly is still referring to the will. Whereby a man does what he ought in any matters. Just need to kind of give you the broadness of it there. It can sound so narrow. Well, he, you know, doesn't lie, or he pays back his loans. These are the obvious things. But what I'm going to do here is kind of expand out and give you a sense of how rendering what is due is now going to, in some sense, encompass very broadly what we're doing in the human life here. All right, let's look in number 9 is a classic definition of St. Thomas. This is a beautiful one, and then roots it in Aristotle. And if anyone would reduce it to the proper form of a definition, he might say that justice is a habit, a firm disposition and a power. Habit, whereby a man renders to each one his due by a constant and perpetual will. The constant and perpetual is really bringing out there this beautiful sense of habit. So is this about the same definition as that given by the philosopher, that always means Aristotle, in the Nicomachean Ethics, Book 5, Chapter 5, who says that justice is a habit whereby a man is said to be capable of doing just actions in accordance with his choice. All right. To give a little sense now of this interesting aspect of rendering what is due, Joseph Pieper says, just bringing out St. Thomas, that the hallmark of justice is always indebtedness. Justice is always a matter of being indebted, and that means indebted, owing something to some other. And right here, and this is really kind of my main point for our reflecting on justice together, I want to suggest, this might sound odd, but I want to suggest that you reflect on what a gift it is that we owe. What a gift it is that there's so many ways that we're indebted. In a sense, I want to suggest right here, you have a great opportunity to think about that, what it really means to be human, even according to the great Greek understanding, and then again, it's just ratcheted up, as is normally the case, by Christianity. In many ways, I present for consideration, in modern man is in flight from owing anything to anyone. We feel like it's a kind of threat to us. Don't tell me I owe something to you. Why would I owe something to you? It's about my rights. I owe something to you, as it were. What did you do for me? And I mean, to owe means there is a claim upon you. And so right here, I'm saying, we try to get in the zone here of reflecting on why is it so beautiful? What is this amazing gift that I owe and I always will so many people, so many things? And just the just man, who is the just man? Main assertion to you. The just man is the one who, maybe more implicitly, though I'm inviting you to think about it explicitly, who realizes this and embraces it and says yes, I do owe. In some sense, I owe everybody something. And my goal is to figure out what that is. That I present for your consideration as the just man. I'll say it right now. Not in scrupulosity, not in living your life in some type of negative fear. Oh, how am I going to be able to do it? Oh, I'm being dragged here and there. To recognize, no, kind of with calm, confidence, and hope. This is the gift to me. The quick thought here, going back to the Republic. The great book, The Republic, you know, the great question in The Republic is what is justice. And one of the great issues early on in the Republic, then, is what's the origin of justice? That it's a really neat question. And it's just so this masterpiece is so transcendent, so transcends time. And Socrates says, the common view, what's the common view of where justice comes from? And this still fits very much today. In a sense, you get the two great views here. What's the common view of justice? That people got together and for the sake of their own private good, they said, you know what? It would be super inconvenient if people steal from me, if people lie to me, etc. So as a community, we're going to get together, we're going to agree to call certain things unjust. In other words, it's a no-no for you to do these things. We'll call those things unjust. That's what in the second book, The Republic, Socrates says, that's the common view of where justice came from. And when you look at it that way, you can see justice then is this kind of negative thing that you simply have to endure for the sake of trying to kind of preserve your own selfish goods. Okay, we'll endure this justice thing, because if we don't, it will just, life around us will get really nasty. Is the great story. Do you remember the story of the Ring of Gyges in Book 2 of the Republic? That's the story where, in short, you know, this is the great original story of the ring. You find that ring, clearly, you know, I would say Tolkien, you know, find that ring, you become invisible. And so the story is told, of course, when, you know, a man finds that ring, what's he going to do? When he puts on it, he realizes he can become invisible. He realizes that no one's going to know what he does. There'll be no consequences to his actions. So, of course, then he will do unjust actions. And the great appeal of this is you kind of look people in the eye and say, admit it. If you really could become invisible, you know what you do, right? This is the transcendent power of that. And it fits hand in hand with saying justice isn't something that comes forth from human nature. It's not really our own good, but something that, you know, in some sense is forced upon us. Well, you know, and then there's Socrates. Or to be just is somehow rooted in the amazing gift of the way things are. I'll go here now further. The further foundation than the Christianity, good Christian philosophy / theology brings out is the ordination of God. God, who has created all things, given us this nature, ordered to an end related to him. I say this to you. What an astounding gift that God has set things up that we owe so much, ultimately, to him. This is his gift to us, that I have ordered things such that you owe to me, you owe your life to me. All right, quick a distinction of a couple kinds of justice, because it's going to help bring that out. Three kinds of justice, or you can two kinds of justice, depending on how you do it. I'm going to do it as the two kinds. Beginning of Nicomachean Ethics treatment of justice. There's something that's called general justice that's also called legal justice. That stands out from, it's not so much talking about one of the four cardinal virtues. All right, so real fast, not going to be able to really do this right. But legal justice or general justice is what St. Thomas calls the virtue of all the other good things that I do for the sake of the common good. I render all the virtuous actions, all the good things that I do, I order them all. I refer them all to the common good. Naturally speaking, Aristotle, St. Thomas would say, this is the highest of virtues. This is the virtue that takes all the good things that we do and say, you know, in some sense, I owe this to the broader community and I refer it to the common good. This is what's called general or legal justice. It's St. Thomas will use this as a natural analogy for supernatural charity when he, in his treatise on charity, which is very beautiful. The thing I want to just quickly note about that is this incredibly powerful sense that, again, the Greeks had, that, again, Christianity is going to so much expand and make so much more sense. We owe, in some sense, being good to the community. We owe it to those around us that we be good and that we become virtuous. Isn't that sounds like such a funny thing? But the Greeks, particularly with their very strong political sense, had the sense of you should be a good man. And centrally understanding why you should be a good man is by a natural ordination. That's how you are the part of the whole community that you're supposed to be. Incredibly beautiful notion. All right, then there's distributive justice and commutative justice, which I'm going to have to, with apology, skip. Really, really fast, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you the Romans, and then we'll be done. All right? So again, the line from the Romans, I want to end up here, and we can bring out more things about justice in our discussion. Owe no one anything except to love each other, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. Goes on, for the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment are summed up in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. All right, St. Thomas's commentary, ready? You might have thought, wait a second, how's it, we're about to go to Mass, and we're going to hear him say, oh no and anything, and Cutterback was just up here saying, it's all about owing people things, this is so great, woo woo woo. So how's that fit together? St. Thomas says, when he says, oh no and anything, he's quote from St. Thomas on his commentary on this. As if to say, you should pay all you owe to everyone so completely that nothing still owing remains. So it says, owe no one anything. He said, fulfill what you owe so well that then in some sense you don't owe anything anymore. But then St. Thomas in the commentary goes on and says, but there are some debts from which a man can never absolve himself. And he refers a couple of examples. What you owe your parents. Isn't that astounding? Never absolve yourself. Isn't it beautiful to think you will always, regardless of how our parents have failed us, you will always owe your parents, always is a strong word, more than you will ever repay them. And that will always be part of who you are. And you will always, obviously, owe God more than we can repay him. And into ages of ages, that will be part of who we are. And another one, then, and I end with this, says, for these reasons, the debt of fraternal love is paid in such a way that it is always owing. Now, this is one of those classic St. Thomas lines. You just got to take some time with that one. The debt of fraternal love is paid in such a way that it is always owing. Again, and he explains that by saying, the reason that you owe love to your neighbor will always be there. And so the debt that we owe to love them is an ever and ongoing debt. It will never go away. In some sense, you'll never be absolved from it. But again, I suggest in the spirit of the presentation that we don't want to be absolved from it. To think about the cardinal virtue of justice is to recognize that it's part of our gifts that we stand in this position of always owing. So I just conclude by saying, then we can talk about more suggestions in our time, in the question and answer. Let's receive the gift of indebtedness. Let's make it habitual to ask, what do I owe? To whom do I owe it? And how do I render it? May we become more like St. Joseph, simply known as the just man. Thanks for your attention.
Thanks for listening to this lecture on the Thomistic Institute podcast. The generosity of people like you makes this podcast possible. If you enjoy these talks, please consider showing your support at www.thomisticinstitute.org/donate. Your donation of even a dollar helps us reach more college students and many others with the powerful truths of the faith, and it ensures that we can keep publishing top-notch lectures on this podcast. Thanks a lot.